I want to welcome everybody again to another episode of the Blue Banter Podcast, a podcast where we are striving to introduce the members of the RPCNA to the pastors of the RPCNA and to serve young and aspiring pastors by gleaning wisdom from men with ministry experience. I am one of your co-hosts, Joe Smith, pastor of Westminster Reformed Presbyterian Church out in Westminster, Colorado.
My name is Aaron Murray, pastor of Marion Reformed Presbyterian Church in the beautiful Marion, Indiana, the promised land of the North. And Joseph, we are without a guest again. This is part three, I think people will be able to see from the title of this podcast, part three of evangelism. And I kind of bloviated and pontificated enough last week, so I'm going to hand this over to you. You can direct us and lead this conversation. So the wheel is yours. Take us where you would, good sir.
Alrighty. I think this week we were wanting to kind of bring things to a little bit of a practical head. We talked last week, you bloviated, as you say, on various things, broader macro level methods and types of evangelism. And I think our goal was to apply some of that more practically today. And so I've got some questions for us, and then we'll be drawing on some of the content that I used when I did CY lectures on sharing the gospel. My third lecture after lecture one, what is the gospel? Lecture two, why share the gospel, which we already kind of touched on. And then lecture three was how to share the gospel. So just some questions for us, and I'll be drawing on some content from that and throwing out questions for you. But I think one of the first things that it can be very easy to skip by, but is probably the most important thing when it comes to how to share the gospel, is the character of the person sharing the gospel and the way in which, the manner in which we present the gospel. Often the delivery of a thing is a huge percentage of how it's received. How you say something is a huge, I hesitate to say it's like more important than what you say, but in terms of its reception, communication being a two-way thing.
Right, the medium is the message.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. And so just curious how you would answer kind of what kind of character should mark our evangelistic efforts, and then supplemental to that, another way of just saying it, why is the how we say something so important, even though we just kind of touched on that a little bit? But
Well, I mean, this gets into our distinction about witnessing versus evangelizing. But I'll just say what the Bible says. 1 Peter 3:15, put in your hearts, honor Christ, the Lord is holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks for a reason for the hope that is in you. And we kind of stop there and we don't look at what the rest of the verse says. And the rest of the verse says, yet do it with gentleness and respect. So the two main characteristics that should define us and how we evangelize is with gentleness and respect. We might talk about, I'm curious what you think about the use of holy irony and sarcasm and more aggressive types of evangelism or encounters that we see in the scriptures. We can hit that later, but that's kind of the exception. There are certain contexts I think we could talk about that's appropriate. But by and large, the two things that you need to be known as when you are sharing the gospel is someone who is gentle and someone who's respectful as you give the reason for the hope that's in you.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And often supplemental to that, gentleness in scripture is often, think of Ephesians 4, 1 to 3. Gentleness and patience are often paired with humility. Respect would include patience. So all of these things are kind of tied in together. We know the scriptural imperative is not to speak the truth, but to speak the truth in love. And so a love for God and a love for people, you could say, are the two macro qualities. And then we would unpack love with some of those virtues that you and I just mentioned. But I think it's just critical that people know that you actually love them, that you have a concern for their souls, and that will be evident in your manner in which you speak to them. Are you now, of course, we agree there's a thing called open air preaching, but in one-on-one conversations, are you more pleading and commanding, or is the general tenor a pleading and a begging to be reconciled to Jesus Christ? And so I think speaking the truth in love, letting them know that you should have a smile on your face, typically speaking. Obviously, there's a time to get deadly serious and say serious things, but when you're speaking about Christ, you should also have a smile on your face, right? Like if it's a joyful thing, once you get, not that you're smiling when you're sharing the law with somebody, right? But when you get to Christ, a pleading, smiling, should probably characterize things, if we're really wanting to convey, the joy and the peace that Christ offers to people.
So do you put on a big goofy grin when you tell people they're going to hell? You're going to hell. Is
No,
that
I just said not during that portion. No, I do always remember Denny's preaching illustration, though, of the guy that did have the big cheesy smile in chapel when he was preaching on the wrath of God, something like that. But yeah, so you want to use your smile legitimately and not in a weird way, but you should smile. Your love for people should come out. I think listening is important. Empathizing with people when and where we can do that, right? Paul speaks in Titus 3, 1 and 2 about being good citizens and good neighbors. And then he grounds that for we once were, right? We once were all of these things. And so, or at minimum, even if we were raised in the church and converted in our youth before we even knew it, right? We still know what it's like to sin and to wrestle against sin. And so we can still, in certain ways, empathize with fellow image bearers who are struggling with against the confusion and the lies of the evil one, right? They are not their only enemy. The world and the flesh, or I'm sorry, the world and the devil are as well. And so empathizing with people, asking them their things, repeating to them what they're saying, right? Paraphrasing what they're saying or summarizing what they're saying can be very helpful in letting people know that you actually are seeking to understand them. And if you do that, they're going to be much more likely to let you speak and to hear out what you have to say. And so I think all of that is critical, showing a genuine interest in the person you're talking to. I mean, this is an image bearer whom you've never met, one of the billions of people that God decreed from before the foundations of the world to live at this time. And it's a lost sinner with a story, right? That should be interesting and should compel love and so forth. And like I said, when it comes down to it, you do all those things, you can say very hard things to people, and they'll, some will still get mad, but that's doing all you can do to have it received well.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts just backing up a little bit to just expressing love, like evangelizing, sharing the gospel with someone is an example of love. And I even tell people, I'm doing this because I love you. Maybe I've never met him before, but I tell him, you're made in the image of God. And because of that, I have a love for you. And I want you to love God and experience the love of God yourself, the forgiveness of God. So even telling people that you're doing it out of an act of love is important, and particularly in how love is just completely misunderstood in today's age. But then you used a word which might trigger people, empathy, or sometimes the word winsome is often used to say, we are to be empathetic and we are to be winsome in sharing the gospel, which I agree with. That being said, and you just even alluded to this, it doesn't necessarily matter how winsome you are. Rebels will rebel. So this is not a 1 + 1 = 2. So if you are nice, people are going to be nice to you. People may respond with some hostility, but that doesn't mean that you yourself are hostile. So we preach an offensive message. calling people and telling them that they are sinners, and that will offend people. But even as we preach an offensive message, we don't have to do it in an offensive manner. So we do faithfully, boldly, unapologetically call people to repentance and to have faith in Jesus Christ, but we don't need to tell them that their breath stinks while we do it.
Right, we're called to adorn the gospel with our behavior and our conduct. That's not us in and of ourselves making adding any beauty to the gospel, right? It is already this most beautiful diamond, but it's like us setting that diamond against that black backdrop, which brings out the luster, right? That's the idea of adorning something. And so, yeah, the manner in which we speak, our conduct, so on and so forth. As you just said, we are to adorn the gospel, and I think there are legitimate ways where you can empathize, you can enter into someone's situation, into their shoes, and express some level of understanding again, because you're made in the image of God, and you once were these things that this person still is.
Do you think there is any place in the evangelism of the church today to express, some of the holy irony that you see from the prophets of the Old Testament, or with Paul and his interaction with the Sanhedrin in Acts 23, those kind of things? Do you think that there's a place for that today?
Well, I've not thought about that a ton. I have thought about it a little, but I haven't, like, I've recognized the examples, and I was reading Isaiah 42, I think this morning. Yeah, 42 or 43. I have to look back. God's just blasting these idols, right? You're nothing. So just, where are you going? Can you proclaim, right? So he's just slamming these idols, right? And we know Elijah and the prophets of Baal and so on and so forth. And so God cannot sin. So if God does something, we have to say that in a sense it could be imitated righteously. Maybe we've maybe I don't know what it is. I mean, you read some of the older guys like Calvin and some of these guys, and the way they just blast people with certain names they call them and stuff. Sometimes it's a kind of comical in a way, but maybe that's what they're tapping into. So I think I'd have to think about it more. I assume you've probably thought about it more. It could easily, like, right, we're called against Ephesians 5 core suggesting, though. So like it could easily, man, where that line is, I'd be honest, I'd be interested in a study on it or hearing from somebody if you have thought about it more. I think it could have a place. I think I would say that, but I would be cautious to, give, just free openness with it, because I think it could be very easy for us to fall into coarse jesting and demeaning in a very unhelpful way. So perhaps the wisest of men and the most sanctified among us could have a proper place for it, but yeah, very
Well,
much skill.
it certainly is a wisdom thing. You mentioned Calvin and others. It just seems like in the past there was this, don't know, you just said what you said, and you weren't fearful. You said things that were hard and challenging, biting even. And then there's been a shift to where it's like, okay, that's not as helpful as maybe we thought it was. So now we're going to try and be super nice, and you can't nice someone into the kingdom. And so now there's a shift back into, at least in broader Christianity, the shift back into more biting words and things. And it just seems like there's a balance somewhere. And I don't know where that balance is. When you look in the scriptures, it seems, I mean, you could look at Galatians and a few other cases, but for the most part, whenever Paul, the apostles, the prophets are using these biting words, it's more towards large groups that they're addressing, not so much individuals. And so I wonder if even that might be a helpful principle. I'm thinking out loud and shooting from the hip with this, but that might be a helpful principle to operate under is, and your more interpersonal interactions, stay away from that holy irony, those biting words. For sure. And then when you're addressing, large groups and stuff, maybe that's okay. I don't know. I know that my own heart, I would tend towards being sarcastic and overly biting. So I'm going to lean more towards the gentleness and respect, but you can still be gentle and respectful, I suppose. And like Paul wasn't disrespectful, but I don't know.
Right.
I'm just shooting from the hip here. Now we are truly bantering.
It's maybe even a conversation similar to the right use of imprecatory psalms and the wrong use
Right.
of imprecatory psalms. Like, God forbid you pray an imprecation against one of God's elect, right? Who's now a child of wrath, but and so yeah, that will take us farther off stream. But I'm saying it plays into that where there's obviously a place for it, but much wisdom and balance. And I think kind of maybe like you said, praying an imprecation against, Bill Bob down the road or something because he's doing something, that would be crossing the line. But obviously there's warrant for praying imprecations against systems, anti-Christian systems, against groups of people, right? The seed of the serpent. They are a legitimate group of people, though we not know who each and every one of them are. But it gets you have to get much more crafty when you get down into individuals and caution and things like that. It sounds maybe like that's something you're noting possibly with the use of holy irony and stuff.
All right. Well, that was a rabbit trail for us, but thank you.
All right, so kind of moving on. I kind of lined out my lectures after talking about the character, with some twos, number two. Two people, two tools, and two moves. And then even I didn't have it in the lecture, but in the original outline, two questions. And so that's going to kind of orient where we go on these next few questions. And so kind of curious your take on. Well, let me say this. The 2x2 principle grounded in Ecclesiastes 4, Luke chapter 10, right? Two are better than one. Jesus sends them out 2x2. So we know that's good to have someone with you, if not a group. But we know it's not the only way. You being a familiar man with Acts, see Philip and Paul doing individual evangelism, even in hostile places. And so I think 2x2 is a good, wise principle in most cases, but just curious your thoughts on in what contexts is it wise or perhaps proper to evangelize by yourself? And in what contexts may it be wise to not evangelize by yourself, or to use extreme caution if you're going to do so. And then just any other thoughts you have on the 2x2.
Well, I mean, even backing up, just hitting Philip and Paul, that was not the norm for them to go by themselves.
Right.
Philip, he has the same thing with Paul, really, but because of the persecution of Paul, Saul, Philip has to scatter, leave from Jerusalem. But even as he's going there, the apostles, Peter in particular, end up coming, and more Christians show up. So, Philip's there. Philip's an evangelist. He's going to do what an evangelist does, and he evangelizes. But that's not the norm. I mean, God sends him out to the Ethiopian eunuch by himself, sure. So there's some of that, but again, that's not the norm. Same thing with Paul when he was by himself in Athens. That was because the Jews in Thessalonica were trying to kill him. So the church there was like, you need to leave, and there's not time to get you on a ship and your companions. So you go, and Paul was like, the first thing that Paul says when they drop him off in Athens is, "Hey, go get Timothy and the rest of the guys." It's like, even going back to Genesis, it's not good for man to be alone. Yes, that's in the context of marriage, but that certainly applies to evangelism, really all areas of life. It's not good for man to be alone. So when is it wise to what's your question again? Wise for
So I was
two by
just, you know,
two?
any contexts in which it may be appropriate or wise to evangelize by yourself, and then contexts where wisdom would warrant really striving after the 2x2 principle, if you will.
Yeah, well, this goes, I think, touches on the formal and the organic distinction that I was making last week. If it's a structure, like a church structured sponsored event, I think 2x2 is essential. If it's organic, you know, and you're having a conversation at the water cooler with your coworker and you're by yourself, like, hang on a second, I don't have the 2x2 thing. I need to go, you know, call up my pastor, at least get him on speakerphone so I can share the gospel with you. That's just kind of silly. So in the more organic encounters that you have with people as you're sharing the gospel, you're going to be alone, and that's okay. But the 2x2 is really important for any type of public evangelism where you're out in the market square. That's when it's really, really critical. So we talked about door to door last week. You know, there are some risks when you go door to door. You don't know if the person's dangerous. You know, like, I'm not going to send one of our high school girls to go knock on a door by herself. She could get kidnapped or something like that. And as much as I love Marion, I've also mentioned, you know, we're one criminal short of being Gotham City. And the most shootings that have taken place in Marion are just a couple blocks away. And so we're going to be dealing door to door, Lord willing, once a month this summer. So I'm going to tell, you know, the families, hey, over here, this is probably where some of the men need to go. And men, you don't need to go by yourself. So there's a safety element involved. But just thinking about this 2x2, like I said, safety. There's also accountability, in the sense that if you're going out and doing street evangelism, for example, I'm going to be much less likely to just cold turkey approach someone and to talk to them about Jesus by myself. But if I've got another brother there, there's that accountability, and there's also that encouragement, and boldness in numbers even to be able to go and to share the gospel. There have been many times where you're talking to somebody and you've got someone with you and they're praying for you the whole time, or vice versa. Or somebody asks you a question and you're just caught flat-footed. You're like, I have no idea how to answer that. Then another person will come in and give an answer. Wow, that was brilliant. Or they'll catch something that the person says and they'll say, okay, that's a pressure point. We really need to focus on that and expose that idolatry and point out their need for Christ. So there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors, more or less. And there's wisdom in having this 2x2 methodology. And practice in sharing the gospel.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. That's basically what I was thinking as well. You know, when you touched on the organic versus the public of where it would be wise, and appropriate to evangelize by yourself, versus when it may be more wise or appropriate to have someone else with you. And so, yeah, I think, you know, another way of just saying what you said would be opportunistic versus intentional, right? Like if it's something planned, it's like a planned event. Like, why not have someone else with you? Like, even the guys you watch on YouTube that are up street preaching by themselves, most of them, somebody's there recording them, right? They may have a video, a stationary thing set up, but most of the time, they at least have somebody else with them recording the situation. So most of them are even still not alone then. But, you know, opportunistic, as you say, right? Like the water cooler thing, or you're just whatever, any situation where you have an opportunity, then I think that's wise and appropriate to go for it. Really, that's what you see with even Philip and Paul in some sense. They kind of had those opportunities thrust upon them by God's providence, if you will, more so than like a planned intentional event.
Well,
And
and
then
even
you go on.
just with the 2x2 real quick, you know, we looked at, or you mentioned Luke 10, where Jesus sends the 12 out or 70 out, either way, you know, synoptics. The same is true with the outposts of the gospel of the church. You know, we don't have a formal church unless there are at least two elders. So this 2x2 principle is good for both evangelism and for worship. So, anyways, that's taking us more to ecclesiology rather than evangelism, but go
Sure.
ahead. Sorry, I cut you off. You were
I
on a
mean,
roll.
no, I was rolling. I was rolling. No, but I think you already kind of touched on something. I was going to ask the next question, like, why help? Why, you know, why is that 2x2 principle helpful? And you already mentioned the two S's, right? Strengthen and safe, or strength and security, however you want to phrase it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. When Graham Smith and I would go out in the park there by the seminary to do evangelism, you know, that first conversation, we'd always have to be like psych each other up, right? Because it is just nerve-wracking. It's spiritual battle. Going up in an in a, I Going up and just talking to a stranger to me is the most nerve-wracking form of evangelism, more so than street preaching, more so than tract signs, any of those other things. Just something about it. The flesh rebels against it. The devil is waging. It's just all sorts of things going on there. But you can do it, and it's easier to do it, as you say, if you have somebody with you.
Yeah, and you
Safety,
build up
obviously.
that momentum too. Like the
Yeah,
first time you
exactly.
talk to someone, it's you're pulling at your own teeth.
Yep.
But then it's like driving downhill or riding a bike downhill.
Yep.
It gets easier and easier and easier.
Yep. The next person's easier to open your mouth to, and the next one easier, absolutely. Yeah, I'd just say the last one, the last, it's such a an encouragement and a blessed kind of fellowship. And those who haven't gone out and evangelized with other brothers and sisters in Christ, it's kind of like the peace that surpasses understanding. I've often said that to people, like, try and describe yellow. You can't do it. You can only say what it's not. You literally cannot describe yellow. You can say it's not blue, it's not red. You can't describe yellow, and especially you couldn't describe it to a blind person. And so there's a peace that doesn't bypass understanding but surpasses understanding. And unless you've experienced that, it's hard to really describe to someone. It's something that has to be experienced. And I'd say it's likewise with evangelism in a group, right? Being out there, sharing the gospel with people, getting scorned together, seeing the encouragements together. It's just a real blessed time of a really unique kind of fellowship and bond that I just encourage others to.
Yeah, real quick, I'm just curious for the listeners, how many of you just completely missed what Joe said because you were thinking about how to describe the color yellow?
You
Because
looked like you were. Your
dude,
face was
well,
out the
I'm sitting
window.
here and I'm thinking like, well, I can say it's a color.
What's that even mean?
I can say that, I can use a word like lemon, I can use a word like sun, I can use the word like dehydration, and all of that conveys the essence of yellowness. But we're not talking. All right, whatever. Anyways, yep. Peace that surpasses
Fail.
understanding. I'm with you.
Okay. You're just derailing like it's your job today. Yeah, so I think those are reasons why, kind of playing on the two again, 2 by 2 rule. And then after I kind of talked about that, again, we're just trying to be very practical, and so encouraging people, because evangelism is a delightful duty, but it can be difficult. And so if you want to get out and evangelize, find somebody else that does, or ask somebody to come out with you, and it will be a great aid to you having another with you. And again, we're talking like public evangelism here. Moving on from that, kind of talked about like two tools. There could be more than two tools, but these are things that I recommended to people. These are things that we use in Westminster, because I've been persuaded that they have a unique place in evangelistic efforts. And we talked about them somewhat last time, when you brought up tracts, and we talked about tracts and what makes a good tract or a bad tract, so on and so forth. But I'm curious, just when I say that to you, what do you think are some helpful tools we can use to help us with evangelism? And when you mention a tool, what would you say are its pros and cons, if it's that kind of tool that would have pros and cons? I kind of sent some to you, and some of those, maybe it wouldn't be such a pro-con thing. Actually, looking at them, maybe they all would. But you think of a tool for evangelism, something that aids your evangelistic efforts, complements, supplements in some way. What are some of those things in your mind, and what are the pros and cons of their use?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was first of all, what were the two tools that you had? I didn't
Sure.
read your lecture, sorry, but just curious.
So it was tracks and
Oh,
signs.
dude, you were alliterating so much. You couldn't come up with another T, tracks, and I don't know, telegraphs or something.
I'm all good with alliterations, except when they just stretch to the form of absurdity and cheesiness.
Yeah, all right, all right.
Simplicity wins.
Yeah.
Tracks and signs. Tracks and signs are the two things. And the reason for tracks and signs, and we talked about what makes good track, bad track, whatever last time,
We're just going to
but
assume that the tracks are good. How about that? We'll just go with
exactly.
that
Yeah,
assumption.
assuming the tracks and signs are both good. The pros and cons of each, and I'll mainly focus on the pros. I think so in my mind, there are like four primary things you can be doing when you go out for group public evangelism. You can do open air preaching, you can do one-on-one conversations, you can hand out tracts, you can hold signs. Okay, and they all have their pros and their cons. And two of those are tools, as I refer to them, tracts and signs. And I like how I've heard others refer to tracts as paper missionaries and signs as silent preachers. And so what I like about those, like where we set up typically in Boulder, Colorado, at the farmers market at a fairly busy intersection of both foot traffic and car traffic, the benefit of tracks, and you can use tracks different ways. You can use tracks to initiate a one-on-one conversation, or you can use them in conclusion of a one-on-one conversation to give someone further reading. But you can also send them out indiscriminately, if you will. And that's where they really take the form of the paper missionary. You're just sending out these pieces of paper that have the gospel message upon them. Right? And that's for people who think that that's like some lesser form of evangelism, or perhaps that it's not, or something, need to understand, when we talked about the distinction, evangelism really requires words. Sharing the gospel requires words, but there's nothing that says that those words have to be spoken. They can be written, obviously. And so if you hand someone a gospel tract and you don't say a word to them, you have just, a matter of fact, evangelized that person. And so what's nice about a paper missionary is it goes places you can't go, and it has a conversation that you may not be able to have. And what I mean by that is this: it gets into someone's purse, it gets into someone's pocket, it gets into someone's home, their hand, it goes with them. They can sit there and chew on the material as they read it, and engage with it in a sense that's not going to be able to really happen as much with a one-on-one conversation per se. And the benefit then of silent preachers, gospel signs, if you will, that may have a question on them, right? Where will you spend eternity? Or some sort of gospel message, John 3:16 or Acts 16:31, something like that.
What are you doing? You keep like
So
looking, it sounds like
looking out
trying to
a
break into the
window.
church.
Well, yeah, somebody's in here. I just saw a head. I don't know who's here.
Well,
But
you can
anyways,
go talk to them. We can we'll just
no,
cut out the
they're
silence.
not out there causing a ruckus. So,
All right, maybe you need a 2x2 just to make sure you're safe. So with a person and a board. Aha. All right. Anyways.
jeez. So the signs, what's nice, they hit the most amount of people. They are the absolute best for volume. They're limited in the content, of course, but you don't need a lot. Acts 16:31, again, how's the Philippian jailer converted? Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. Boom, over with. And so you can hit such a high volume of both foot and car traffic with signs. And if they're good signs and the language is clear and easily seen, people see them from far away that may never even get close enough to receive a tract or to even hear what you're saying if you're open air preaching. And so, again, it has a place along with the tracts, with this idea of a paper missionary and a silent preacher that complement street preaching and one-on-one conversations, and I think have a very helpful place. And honestly, anyone can do them. They still take some courage, absolutely, in the Lord. But if you will, less so than street preaching, and one-on-one conversations. Like it, you get that sign, and as soon as you hold that sucker up and flip it up, you've broken the ice. At that point, you're just standing there with it. Or tracks, you just getting them again indiscriminately, hitting people as they come by. God bless you. Have a good day. Boom. Give them the track. Boom. They walk on.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like I guess we could make the distinction one-on-one conversations and street preaching or whatever, door-to-door. This is more active evangelism. Tracts and signs are more passive evangelism, but both of them are still evangelism, right? You're still engaged in proclaiming the gospel, whether it's holding a sign or having a conversation. I am curious. Again, assuming that these tracks are good, what would be some of the cons then that you have in your mind regarding tracks and signs?
So I mean the cons of tracts may be that someone would have questions that the tract doesn't answer, right? And so that's where a one-on-one conversation would be better. Obviously, they're limited in content, like the sign, so they're not going to be able to say as much. Tracts don't have nonverbals like you can't empathize, if you will, the same way through a track. If you're good with nonverbals, you can't convey those things and convey the heart to people as well. The signs again would be limited on content, and they, again, you're not having the ability to engage with the person. It's more of like throwing a seed out there, putting the pebble in the shoe or whatever, but you can't do any cultivation, if you
Well,
will.
that's why a good track is going to have contact information, so there could be that
Right.
follow-up. But so I'm gonna sh this is gonna derail us a little bit, but I gotta share this with you. We were talking about having contact information and just being aware that some people might actually contact you. So some fella, I'm assuming it's a guy, got on our church website, lifted the picture that the church has of me as the pastor, and they went and sent emails out. They made up a fake email with my picture and my name, sending it out to the elders of this congregation, who also their email was up there, saying something like, "Hey, can we talk soon? I'm at a conference and I'm out of gas. Can you send me some Apple gift cards?" So people, if your information is out there, they will use it for better or for worse. But all right, what do your signs look like?
So they're white. They're on like I've ordered them. I forget the website I ordered them from. So they're white, and they've got a little bit of thickness to them. I'm struggling right now for the material name that would be helpful, but they're definitely like a thickness, and there's more of a plasticky feel to them than like just some sort of paper thing that's going to be real flimsy. So they are stiff, kind of like signs that you may have if you're that sometimes you'll see them stuck in a yard, right? That can deal with some wind. They're not going to fold or bend
Do you
or
guys make
whatever.
them yourself or do you order them somewhere?
No, that's what I was just saying. I ordered them from a website and I
Okay.
forget. But somebody in our congregation was saying that they may be interested in making some along those lines. But anyways, they have large blue lettering on them. That sticks out really good.
Okay. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. The ones that have like Jesus saves on them. Like those.
Yeah, it could
Yeah.
have.
Yeah.
Yeah, this website would have all kinds of
Right.
different options. Our two are "Where will you spend eternity?" and then Acts 16:31. Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and you will be saved.
Have you seen those signs on like the billboards on the highway that have similar questions? Like, where will
Yes.
you spend eternity? And you kind of look
Yes.
at them and you're like, oh, it's kind of cheesy. And it's got the phone number. Have you ever called the phone number before?
No, have you?
So I did. Apparently, this is done by the Mennonites of all people.
Really?
These, yeah, which kind of blows my mind. But you call it, and so when you call the number, then it'll ask you, which sign did you see, and then you hit the number, And then based on that number, it will give you a more expansive message or information about that one tagline. And it's got like, I don't know, 10 of them. And most of them are okay. There's a few that are kind of dumb and cheesy, but for the most part, it's pretty good.
Huh, no, I had never called him.
Yeah, I
I
was
never
bored on a
called
road trip, and so I did.
him.
All right, sorry. Other tools, you listed things like amplification, prayer booths, video recordings, those kinds of things. Do you guys use amplification when you do street preaching?
No. The reason is often you watch YouTube videos and it just gives people, I think, in some ways, an unnecessary reason to complain and to call the cops on
Yeah,
you and to
it's
have
an
interaction.
immediate annoyance.
So, I'm fine with just working on my voice, getting louder, and just, at some point, amplification isn't going to be heard either. So it's a degree. It's not, and so I just want one less reason for somebody to try and bring us up on a local city ordinance charge or
Well,
something
right.
like
That's
that.
the big thing, because you can get yourself in trouble if you're not following the city ordinances with your
Right.
amplification.
So we don't use it. I just have a small stool, stand up. We can get pretty close to the people.
I do think, though, there's nothing wrong with using amplification. I think even Jesus used amplification, not in the sense that we mean, but when Jesus goes out on the boat and they sail out a little bit to talk to the crowds, it's because sound carries over water. So there is wisdom in whether you use amplification or not, but there's nothing wrong with it.
Sure. Yeah, and area acoustics
But
come into play
they
and
also wanted to hear Jesus. So,
right.
don't set up your speaker right next to, some family who's trying to have a picnic right in the park.
Right. Which we do. It's like we're at a public park that borders a farmer's market. And so you have people both just chilling in the park and getting their farmer's market on. And yeah, I think we would get called in on, perhaps even by the people at the booths. But
Yeah,
yeah.
so video recording. I'm curious on your thoughts on that.
Well, I
And
didn't put that one.
explain.
So you, so,
Oh,
so
you want me to do
you,
it?
I want you to do it. I
Okay.
didn't have that one on there.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, well, I guess I came up with that. There you go. So a lot of guys will have take like a GoPro, or they'll have some guy walk around with a camera when they do this public proclamation, which is fine in and of itself. I mean, I've been helped by watching some of these videos and seeing how some guys interact with people. Like, I think Jeff Durbin, who I've got plenty of things to disagree with, but I think he models gentleness and respect probably better than anybody else I've ever seen. And I've only been able to see that because of the video recording. So there's positive warrants there. It's also helpful because just safety again. The caution I have about it is I was out doing evangelism, and this one guy who wasn't even with us, he was with a different group of like some other church. And I'm having this conversation with this lady, and it was going really, really well. She was listening, probably would have had some type of follow-up conversation. And he comes and he just puts the video camera like right in her face and just completely scared her off, annoyed me. So I don't know, video recordings are fine, just again, don't be, it's sanctified common sense. Don't be obnoxious.
Right. No, I'm with you. It's kind of like one of those things with amplification. It takes wisdom and there's going to be a balance. It's
Right, let's get
I'm
to
not.
number four. We camped
Let's
out a lot
do
on that.
it. Yeah. All right, so the final way was again just getting very concrete and how to share the gospel and again playing off of the can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm listening.
Sorry, my
Okay.
somebody's calling me on my phone right now. Somebody's calling me and it just totally erased the Zoom screen off my computer and I thought everything just went blank.
No, I thought you were having a
So
stroke. I was like, are you okay?
no. So anyways, playing off of the two people, two tools, main tools at least, and two moves. Is what I've got into with the methods. And there's essentially, I think in scripture, you see two methods which both consist of of two basic moves, if you will. You have the moves of law gospel. You see Jesus doing this, for instance, with the rich young ruler, and it's been kind of made YouTube famous, if you will, in our day by Ray Comfort and his ministry. But then you also see the two moves of person work, and you see this in the early chapters of John. It's not so much a directly focus on first bringing conviction of sin, like the law of gospel. It's just a presentation to someone of the person and work of Jesus Christ. And
Well, and you
so I
can't
think,
even talk about the person and work of Christ without the law gospel distinction. So that's even contained in the person and work. Like,
sure.
why did Christ have to come? Why the God man? What is his work, and why does that matter for you? And why did he have what? Like, what is significant about the active and passive obedience of Christ? We talk about the work of Christ. So it's kind of a both and, right?
Sure, it would definitely draw you in a conversation into those things. I was just simply making the point you don't see that expressly in John chapter 1 when you see them, you see the first
Sure.
disciples just simply going out, typically with their friends and family, just speaking
Sure.
about the person and work of Christ, though that was certainly within an Old Testament church context, and so you would have had people more familiar with those things. But anyways, yeah, so those would be like the two moves. And like I said, why it's helpful for me, I like, I dig not everything about Ray Comfort, but he's kind of like Jeff Durbin in a lot of ways. I think he, for the most part, really models kind of the character we talked about earlier in most of his interactions with people and ability to stay cool-headed. And I know for me that that basic little, his good person test, if you will, where he's using the law and asking you, have you ever told a lie? What do you call a liar? Have you ever stolen anything? What do you call a thief? So on and so forth. I know that worked on me, was part of what was part of my conviction. And what I like about having that, and you can go on YouTube and see Ray Comfort do this. For time reasons, I won't, we had role play with this when I did lectures on evangelism. We don't have time for that now, but you can go on YouTube and watch some of his videos and see him do this. But I have his basic script in my mind, and why I like that is it just makes me, again, all it, ma it makes it, in a sense, all the more easy for me to open my mouth when essentially I know the gist of what I'm first going to say, what I'm then going to say, what I'm then going to say, what I'm then going to say, and what I'm basically going to end with. So it's the same reason that I'm a fan of writing a manuscript, but not reading a manuscript. I just like being able to think myself clear and know the gist of what I'm going to say beforehand, even if it doesn't come out word for word. And so that's what it's helpful for me, and that's really why I encourage to have something like that in your head, to have an outline, to have a script. Denny Pruto, in his in his book, he has like his six little moves of things. And if you want to use that in his book on evangelism, not preaching, he also has six moves in preaching typically, but in evangelism he
All
has
about
like
those
his,
moves. He likes
yeah,
to
he's
move the
all about the
movement.
moves. He's all about the moves, six moves. Something in your head, this is what I'm going to say first, and boom, boom, boom. And I will say, if you watch Ray Comfort's videos and you see how it plays out, like that is not acting. Like if you use his basic method, that legitimately is how 9 out of 10 conversations will play out. And I know that from my own experience and seeing others do it. So you are really getting the real deal when you watch his videos if you would use something like that. And I just find it helpful, especially when we were going out at Pittsburgh University campus when we were in seminary. You may just walk up to somebody and they may not hardly want to talk, but you ask them, hey, can I just share the gospel with you for a minute? Boom. you already know exactly what you're going to say. If you have something like that in your head, boom, boom, boom. I remember, this young woman just laying down, waiting for the bus to get there. Let me walk through that with her in like 2 minutes. Boom, she got on the bus and rolled out. And if you don't have some sort of script in your head, unless you were like uber talented, on your feet in the moment, it's going to hinder it,
Yeah,
in most
at the
cases, I
very
think.
least, it's very helpful to have a basic outline of what you want to say and how you want to say it. So whether
Exactly.
that's Ray Comfort's method or not, I think the using the bridge illustration from Romans 6:23, leaving the
Sure.
Romans road, is really good. And I'm not I was going to talk about those. I'm not going to for time's sake. But there's YouTube videos. You can watch people give the bridge illustration or the Romans road. It takes 2 minutes to do, and I think that's a very simple, efficient and clear way to articulate the gospel to people. I think it's also good to have gospel verses memorized in your pocket. So not just the references, I mean, at bare minimum the references, but having, simple 1 or 2 verses long things about that. Like John 3:16 is a good verse. We're Calvinists and people want to say John 3:16 disproves Calvinism, and so Calvinists don't want to use John 3:16, which is absolutely ridiculous. Use John 3:16. Use 1 Timothy 1:15. Use 1 Corinthians 15:3. Use Ephesians 2:8. Use John 14:6. I mean, all of these are very good. So have these in your back pocket, ready to just quote to people and let the word of God do the work.
Yeah, well, I like what you said about Romans 6:23, because that's essentially a two-move
Right. Yeah,
method as
exactly.
well.
That's law gospel.
Yeah, so that's good. And then just the last thing I'll just say ever so briefly and plug, and then you can get to the mystery question, is, two people, two tools, two moves, but then also apologetically, two questions that just help also flip the burden of proof on people and help you to engage wisely. And these are from a Greg Kochel's book, Tactics. So some form of the question, what do you mean by that? If somebody challenges you on something, getting clarity first. And then second, some form of the question, why do you believe that? Or how did you come to that conclusion? And so it flips the script on people, and most people don't actually make arguments in real life. They just make claims. And so flipping that on them and asking them can have a very powerful effect of showing someone their own folly, that they actually haven't thought through their position as well. And so I think those are two helpful questions. What do you mean by that? How did you come to that conclusion? Can also give you some firepower, if you will, in engaging with people at an apologetic level. And then just the one other thing I like to impress on people with apologetics is something that I heard Voddie Baucham say one time. There's like it help the more you can know about unbelieving religions, the better. But you don't need to feel ill-equipped if you don't, because there's like as many people as there is in the world, essentially, there's that many forms of disbelief. And so your main focus should be knowing catechisms, confessions, knowing the truth, knowing the scriptures, and portraying that to people, because we believe Romans 1, right? That all people know. And so, being able to focus on the truth, use those questions wisely, and get back to law, gospel, person, work of Christ, because that's really what these people need more than anything.
Yep. Well, and this is how Jesus shares the gospel with people, is by asking questions. And so you've got two twos and T's and toes and all this. So I'll give two book recommendations before we get to the mystery question. The first is Tactics, another T that you've already referenced. I've given that book away to more people than I have fingers. It's a fantastic book. And then another book called Questioning Evangelism by Randy Newman. I don't know much about Randy Newman, but the book is good. And again, just focusing on asking questions of people when you do share the gospel, sharing the gospel like Jesus did. So, those two books, I think you would be blessed by purchasing them, reading them, studying them, doing a book study on them. It's a good time, and it will help you in your evangelistic endeavors. Mystery question here. I don't know that I can make a connection to evangelism, so I'm going to ask it, but here I'll give it an attempt. All right. You're sharing the gospel with someone. They're talking about the Bible. Like, there's some weird stuff in the Bible. Why should I believe it? Here's one weird thing: Jephthah's vow. This guy says he's going to sacrifice his daughter. The text says that he fulfilled his vow. Did in fact Jephthah offer up his daughter as a burnt offering to the Lord? Don't you ask me, what do I mean by that, or how did I come to that conclusion?
Did he offer up his daughter as an offering to the Lord?
Judges 11. He makes this vow: Lord, if you give the Ammonites into my hand, the first thing that comes out of my house, I'm going to offer it up as a burnt offering to the Lord. The Lord gives him victory. He comes home. There's his daughter coming out, singing and having Timberland dancing. Jephthah freaks out. She says,
Seems to be a
"Why?
perpetual virginity going on there, right?
I'm asking you, dude. I've got my thoughts, but I'm asking you. You're in the hot seat this time."
Well, so I mean, offering her, if obviously not unto death,
Go on.
but as a perpetual virgin, it seems to me.
So, yeah, I agree with you. You're not, you didn't quote Calvin, you didn't quote Augustine, you didn't quote anybody. You just like just spat out your opinion, which I agree with. I take that position as well. But you didn't give me anything.
Well, I didn't know where you were coming from until this very second. I didn't have time to phone a friend.
All right.
And that's not like a passage I've studied in depth, so I don't have Calvin and
I
Augustine
thought you were a
memorized
pastor.
on it.
You haven't studied every single verse in scripture in depth.
No.
No, me neither. It's a big book. right. Well, yeah, I take that view as well, that he did not offer his daughter as a sacrifice. I mean, he just goes and the Lord uses him to push back the Ammonites who worshipped Moloch, and they were guilty of child sacrifice. Anyways, there's a whole thing. I think Jephthah is one of the most slandered Christians in the scriptures. I have actually a really high opinion of Jephthah, but that's for another time. Anything else you want to add on that, good sir?
Oh.
All right, we nailed that question. That was very stimulating, thought-provoking. There we go. This has been another episode of the Blue Banter Podcast, an anthology of pastoral theology. We have sent some requests, invitations for other pastors to come and be interviewed by us. We're still waiting to hear back from a few of them. So we'll see how things go in the next few weeks. So we do appreciate you guys listening to just Joe and I go back and forth on evangelism. If you like this episode, you can share this episode on social media. If you have a question, you'd like to wait a second. I messed up again. If you like this episode, you can rate and review us on iTunes or Spotify or whatever podcast catcher you use. You can share this episode on social media. If you have a question you'd like us to ask the pastors that we have on this podcast, or you'd like to suggest we have your pastor on the podcast, you can email us at bluebanterpodcast@gmail.com, bluebanterpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, whether you eat, drink, or banter, to all to the glory of God.